Blood dripped from Kame's knives as he stole through the palace corridors. The shadows flew before him, a malevolent whirlwind of darkness and death, snuffing out the candles along the walls with their passage. Kame saw just fine. The ache in his side was gone. He felt rejuvenated. The sacred brothers in the throne room had fallen to him in a handful of heartbeats. Driven by anger, it took him almost as long to kick open the locked door. But his fury redoubled, so hot he felt he might explode at the slightest touch. He rounded a corner and skidded to a halt at the entrance to a spacious room. Rows of glass cases covered the floor beneath the stiff heads of a dozen hunting trophies. Five men awaited him.
It's over. You're done interfering with our plans.
The other brothers flanked Kame.
Nice suit. Did it come with a leash?
I'm Grand Master now, and soon I'll be a lord.
Kame let his hands rest at his sides as the soldiers moved in. A veteran brother lifted his hand as a prelude to attack. Then, the darkness exploded. Kame watched without malice or mercy as the soldiers fell one by one and were consumed. All except for Marcus, who stood in a shrunken circle of light, untouched. He had slashed at the darkness around him as his men cried out for help, but he did not budge from the circle of light. When the shadows finished their feast, they parted before Kame as if they knew his mind. Perhaps they did. He didn't know, and he didn't care. The remains of the soldiers lay in huddled masses, their flesh gnawed away down to the bone.
What kind of devil are you?
Kame slunk forward, his knives held low. Marcus turned and revealed a round shield strapped to his other arm. A little larger than a buckler, the targe looked like a relic from another century. Kame lunged with a double cut, low and high. The links of a mail shirt stopped his left-handed suite. The other was knocked aside by the edge of the targe. Kame spun away as Marcus's sword whistled past his ear. From behind the protection of his shield, Marcus harried Kame around the room. Kame stepped around a glass trophy case. Marcus shattered it with a sidearmed blow.
He should have stayed away.
He centered his sword point on Kame's chest.
You should have let us take the girl. Now you're going to die.
Kame launched a feinted counter thrust, but Marcus batted it aside with the shield.
You're already dead. You're just not smart enough to realize it yet.
Marcus charged. Kame twisted away from the sword, but the shield's boss caught him in the chest and drove him back into the wall. His left arm was trapped between the shield and the room's partition. Kame caught the sword with a desperate parry. Marcus's stale breath blew in Kame's face as they strained against each other, chest to chest. Around the periphery of the room, the shadows quivered with agitation. Kame heard them in the back of his head.
Back! This is my fight!
But he couldn't push free. Marcus was bigger, stronger, and he had the leverage. Moment by moment, he crushed the breath from Kame's lungs. Inch by inch, the sword's edge dipped closer to his head.
Not so dangerous now, are you? Kame the Knife, the most feared man in Lowtown, chopped up and gutted like a market hog.
Kame's chest burned. His right arm was shaking, and he lost feeling in his left. He could see his reflection in the surface of Marcus's blade.
I wonder, will you scream like your lady love did when I stuck her with my prick?
Kame spat full in his face. Marcus drew back his sword as he blinked away the sputum. The motion made some space for Kame, just enough. Marcus staggered backward, one hand pressed to the side of his neck. Ruby red arterial blood streamed down the front of his fine uniform.
No!
The blood roared in Kame's ears like a rushing flood. His hands shook from the exertion. The shadows had quieted at the edge of his vision. Flicking the blood from his blades, Kame resumed his hunt.
Ha! Our chariot awaits, princess!
A carriage could be seen in the Bailey courtyard below, surrounded by fluttering torches, held aloft by rain-drenched soldiers.
You! Down below! Look up!
But Ral's words were lost in the storm.
Damn it!
Josie almost laughed at his predicament. Besides the door, there was no other way off the roof, except for a 50-foot drop to unforgiving stone.
Your lover is dead by now, darling. A pity I didn't get the chance to cut his throat myself. Shall we go see the corpse?
Before Rao could take a step, however, a shape appeared in the doorway. Josie didn't have to see the face to know who it was. Relief, so long withheld, drove away the bitter chill as Kame stepped out onto the roof. Josie could see that his side was paining him by the way he walked. His long knives glittered in his hands, their blades stained scarlet. And he wore something new. The hilt of a sword juttered over his right shoulder. The sergeant moved from behind the door.
Cap!
Rao meshed his forearm hard against her lips. Josie's muscles went rigid as she witnessed what next happened, for she had seen it before in the cellar beneath her father's house. The knight came alive. One moment the mace was sailing toward his head, and then Kame was gone, wrapped in impenetrable shadows. Red stains blossomed on the brother's uniform, at his side, his arm, his chest. Slack-jawed, the soldier collapsed and did not move again. Kame emerged from the darkness.
Bloody Phoebus! Not another step! The princess and I are leaving. You'll stand aside if you don't want to see her inside splattered all over the yard.
Kame stopped a dozen paces away.
I don't think so, Rael. Without Josie, you're just an upstart with dreams of grandeur.
I've got important friends! People who want to see me on the throne! Princess or no princess, I will rule Otha!
Then prove it. Kill her.
Josie looked into his eyes. He wasn't bluffing.
Stay back!
But Kame continued closing the distance between them. Rael shifted his grip, and Josie felt herself slipping. Her bare feet scrabbled on the slick tiles. Kame dropped his knives as he leapt for her. They slid down the slope, both of them straining to reach the other, but all she could think about was Rao lurking above them, ready to pounce at any moment. Then the roof ended, and empty space yawned beneath her feet. By mere inches, their fingers missed. Something had seized her arm and jerked her plummet to a halt. She looked up through the pouring rain, thinking Kame had somehow managed to catch her. But what she saw instead brought the scream rushing up her throat. Black as coal, so dark she couldn't make out its outline at first. It perched on a stone rain spout like a gargoyle. It looked like an overgrown wolfhound or a great jungle cat, with deep black holes for eyes and huge fangs like sooty icicles. Though the thing looked monstrous, it held her arm gingerly in its massive jaws. Josie shook as she hung from the mouth of the beast and contemplated the stones of the courtyard below. With firm resignation, she reached up around the creature's neck with her other arm. Rough bristles scraped against her wet skin. The creature shook its head and let go. Her heels landed on firm footing. Shivering, she clutched at the wall. Her fingers found purchase on an entablature of ornamental scrollwork below the building's cornice. She looked up. The beast was gone, vanished like a phantom. But the silhouette of a head peered over the edge of the roof above.
Help! Kame!
But the wind snatched the words from her mouth. Lightning split the sky, and the head disappeared. Eyes squeezed shut, Josie tightened her grip and prayed. Kame had recovered one of his sous-eats, a small miracle, but his thoughts were on Josie dangling below. He didn't know what she had managed to grab onto. He couldn't see five strides in front of him through the storm's gloom. Whatever it was, he didn't think her grip would hold for long. He had to finish this fast. He fainted and cut low. Rao beat the strikes aside and countered, but Kame was already moving. He slashed for the head, but Rao jumped out of range. Something else was bothering Kame. When Josie had fallen over the side of the roof, he panicked. She was going to die, and it was his fault. He deserved to die with her. But when he reached the edge, time had slowed to a crawl. In that instant, the shadows had scattered, and he'd felt the presence again. The same presence he had felt in the vine, and again in Josie's cellar. The sensation had jangled his nerves like a splash of ice water. He'd stopped himself as his feet started over the side, but the feeling was gone. Kame wiped his face with his free hand. The bizarre presence might have left, but his situation had deteriorated. The shadows were gone, back to wherever they came from, and his side ached worse than ever. Rao adopted a casual fencing stance, sword arm halfway extended, feet apart. The gleaming point of his weapon wove small circles between them as he glanced to Kame's shoulder.
Pick up a new toy, Kame? Watch out! You might pick up a little style and ruin your reputation.
Knees bent, knife held low, Kame slunk toward his prey.
Worry about how you're going to get away.
Get away? This is exactly where I want to be. You and me. The winner takes all.
Kame couldn't believe the man's hubris. Rao was no slouch with a sword, and as cold-blooded as any killer on the street. But even he couldn't hope to defeat Kame in a fair fight.
Do you really think...
Kame dropped flat to the rooftop as a steel sliver sailed from Rao's offhand. The throwing blade spun over Kame's head to strike the wall behind. Kame ground his teeth together, annoyed at himself for forgetting Rao's penchant for dirty tricks. Rao didn't give him time to browbeat himself, but rushed in behind the throw. Kame pushed off the wet tiles. He blocked the first thrust and spun away from the follow-up. But his foot slipped on a loose tile. Pitched off balance, he parried a swift slash, but the impact knocked him on his back. A tearing sensation ripped through his side. A trickle of warmth oozed down his ribs. He rolled back to his feet on the unsteady surface and scuttled sideways. Somehow, during the exchange, they had traded places. Now, Rao backed him toward the precipice above the bailey. Kame kept low and made himself as small a target as possible. He reacted a split second too late to an attack and paid the price with a slice down his right biceps. Not too deep, but it bled with a vengeance. Kame switched the knife to his left hand and responded with a riposte to create some space between them.
How does it feel?
Rao advanced on light steps.
Knowing you're about to die at my hands? Oh, it has to hurt. I know you've always considered yourself the better man.
Kame gazed into the eyes of his enemy. Behind the arrogant twist of Rao's features dwelt a frightened man. A man who had lived in Kame's shadow for so long, he couldn't imagine a future without him. Kame tilted his head to let the cool rain patter on his face. He and Rao were two edges of the same blade, more alike than he had ever realized. With a momentous effort, Kame let the anger pour out of him, and he smiled. Rao's lips twisted into an ugly frown. Kame didn't retreat or dodge the attack when Rao glided forward behind a long thrust. He leapt to meet it straight on. Kame's blade caught the upthrust sword and twisted it away. A stiletto came up in Rao's other hand for a swift stop thrust, but Kame grabbed the wrist. They grappled chest to chest, both heaving for advantage. Kame drove with his hips, and like a blade returning to its sheath, the suit knife punched into Rao's navel. Rao convulsed against Kame's shoulder.
No! You aren't better!
Kame pushed. Rao sprawled on the tiles, one hand pressed to his abdomen, the other stretched over his head, as if reaching for something that wasn't there. Kame left the man to gasp out his final breaths alone. He went over to the roof's edge. He couldn't see anything.
Josie!
If there was any response, he couldn't hear it over the wind. He was searching the face of the building for a way down, when a shiver that had nothing to do with the cold skittered up his spine. The Ketakush flashed through his mind, and the voracious shadows he had faced in Rao's suite. Kame's fingers tightened around the hilt of his knife as he moved. Kame toppled toward the roof's edge as a line of fire sliced across his lower back. His hands slipped on the wet tiles. With a frantic heave, he lurched sideways and saved himself. A black-robed shape perched on the roof's peak. Amid flashes of lightning, the sorcerer's stoic features emerged, glistening like alabaster under his gaping cowl. Kame took stock as he watched his enemy through the haze of rain and mist. He knew he was hurt, how bad he couldn't tell, but every movement sent rippling talons of agony clawing through his body. The twinge in his chest returned, pulsing under his heart, whispering its seductive call into his ears. Just surrender, it said, and the pain will be gone. Part of him wanted to give in. It would be easy to let the power take over. Kame pushed himself to his feet. Sensation returned to his leg as he staggered away from the edge of the roof. His aches faded into the background when a small, almost innocuous knife appeared in the sorcerer's hand. Where did its matte black metal come from? The same metal as his father's sword. The answer was staring him in the face, so simple, and yet the implications reverberated to the core of his being. Cain climbed the sloped pitch of the roof.
You killed the Earl. You killed my friend Matthias. And 16 years ago, you killed my father. I want to know why.
Levictus rose to his full height like an uncoiling serpent.
Before we were an instrument, we went where bidden, unseen, unheard, to take those who were marked for death. Baron Duvalka was one of many.
Baron? His father was nobility? Cain never knew. Red-hot anger flooded his thoughts as he brooded over all the things he never had a chance to know about his parents. But he tamped it down. He had to stay in control.
Why? Of what value was my father's death to you?
Our masters commanded it. We obeyed without knowing the reason. But now we know many things that were mysteries before. About secret dealings. About the heir of House Tenebrae, born of a mortal father. And a daughter of Shadow.
What a... daughter of Shadow? You mean my mother?
The sorcerer took a step toward him, not threatening in itself, but Cain had seen the man move and felt the measure of his strength. Although thin of frame, this foe was more lethal than a dozen thugs like Raoul. Something moved in Cain's peripheral vision. Dark shapes gathered in the gloom surrounding the rooftop.
We considered allowing you to live.
The sorcerer produced a second knife from the folds of his robe.
But the Lords of Shadow have demanded your extermination. And we must obey in order to be free.
Cain braced himself, but nothing could have prepared him. As a thousand points of darkness swarmed from every direction, the shadows crawled up his boots, latched onto his cloak, and stung him with tiny, needle-sharp fangs. He lashed out with his knife, but they came too fast, flowing like quicksilver around his attacks. Pain burst anew from his back, accompanied by the sickening sensation of things trying to wriggle into his wound. Levictus glided through the mass of his pets, his knives glittering like black jewels in the night. Cain thrust to halt the advance, but the sorcerer shifted without moving, and the sweet's point met empty air. Cain jerked back just in time, as the black knife traced a searing incision down his cheek. 2 inches lower, and it would have severed his throat. He spun and attacked from a different angle, but his enemy was gone. The shadows vanished as well, but Cain could feel their presence in the dark, stalking him. He turned in place, all senses tuned for the slightest sign of the sorcerer. Cain's face burned like he'd been tagged with a hot iron. He longed to close his eyes just for a moment, but the sorcerer lurked somewhere in the darkness, watching him, waiting for an opening. Cain's ears caught a sound, as black metal gleamed out of the corner of his eye. He closed his stance a moment too late. Now he was bleeding from fresh wounds across his injured side, and he was disarmed. Again, Levictus vanished. Cain limped in a slow circle.
What did you do with my mother? Did you kill her too?
You know the truth, but you cannot face it. Cannot embrace it as I have.
Stop talking in riddles and tell me where she is.
She dwells in the peerless realm of her ancestors, beyond the veil, in the land of shadow.
The words echoed inside Cain. In his memory, he was looking up at his mother, standing on the widow's walk of their family home, her features framed in black tresses like the waters of a tempestuous sea. Her dusky skin glowed in the light of the setting sun as she faced the wild northlands and the great dark forest beyond his father's domain. Cain tried to swallow, in a mouth gone dry. He hadn't been able to believe it before, but now, like a blind man feeling the surf on his toes for the first time, he couldn't deny it any longer. His mother really was one of the Shadow Folk. His father, a mortal man, had brought her home as his new bride, never guessing the Shadow would come to reclaim its own. Cain was a half-breed, a freak caught between two worlds, and now he was going to die without the chance to discover what he had lost. His chest contracted in a painful spasm. Then he caught sight of a dark mass looming in the sky over the palace. He looked up, dreading some new attack. But a familiar voice called to him from the storm-shrouded sky. It sounded as though she were shouting from the other side of the city.
Kane!
Kid, where are you? I need you!
I'm trapped! He's mocking me!
What?
Kane glanced up and around. The rounded dome of the palace was topped by a narrow steeple, but the dark cloud hovered above even that. A gust tickled the nape of his neck, and Kane spun around, only to be confronted with a wall of dense shadows. He could feel his death approaching on silent footsteps.
What can I do, kid?
But she was gone. Just when he needed her most, she was beyond his reach. But something she said nipped at his brain. He's blocking me. What did that mean? Was she talking about Levictus? How could he... Shadow magic. The sorcerer must have detected Kit's presence and taken steps to separate them. But how could Kane help her? Kit's words at the cabin came back to him.
The blood calls to its own, Kane. You are your mother's son. You already possess everything you need.
The blood calls to its own.
The sorcerer appeared out of nowhere. Kane backpedaled across the slippery tiles as the black blade sought his flesh. He evaded their touch with a roll and came up on his feet, perilously near to the edge. He was trapped. The rage returned. Fiercer than before, burning away his fear. If he was going to die, he would do it as he had lived, on his feet and facing his enemies. As Levictus approached, Kane reached up over his shoulder. An electric shiver ran through him as his fingers closed around the hilt of his father's sword. A vision appeared before his eyes. His father's estate as it had been 16 years ago. The villa in flames. Levictus standing over his father. The blade pierced his father's chest. And Kane cried out, pain bursting from his insides, as if the weapon had pierced his flesh instead. Kane blinked. He ran through a field of wildflowers in every hue and variety. His parents chased after him, their laughter ringing in the summer air. He glanced over his shoulder, but they had fallen far behind. He could barely see them, yet their eyes latched onto him from across the distance, watching him, waiting for... Kane blinked. He was back on the palace rooftop. The sword shimmered like a shard of black ice in his hand. Water danced along the temper of its razor-keen edges. It felt odd holding it, and at the same time familiar, like coming home. His father's voice reached across the years.
Justice.
Levictus had stopped, half a dozen paces away. The sorcerer stood there, with raindrops streaming down the hard planes of his face, watching, waiting. With a grim smile, Kane stepped toward his enemy, and the ache in his chest exploded.
Kane.
Kit appeared, as a sensation of weightlessness enveloped him. Joy radiated from her smile like the dawn of the first morning. He had never seen her like this before. Gone was the girlish ingenue. In her place was a woman in full bloom. The woman Kane had always imagined she could be. She bent down to him, and the darkness flowed along her body like a second skin. But it wasn't entirely black. Murky patterns twisted within the dark. As he reached up, they played along the flesh of his hand and arm like tiny vibrations. And then penetrated his skin, through the muscles and sinews, down into his bones. Colors beyond description spun around him, striations of light and shadow cast into physical form.
Trust yourself.
Kane knew what had to be done, but could he do it? Could he release the bands of self-control that had held him together for so long? If he let go, would he lose himself? He took another glance over the side. The darkness parted around him like a veil of sheerest gossamer, and he saw Josie, clinging to a stone projection, fighting for her life. She wouldn't give up, not as long as a single breath remained within her. Yes, he could do it. For her. Kane released the breath, and with it, all his reservations. The sorcerer stood like a statue of some forgotten demigod of the night. But Kit had said he could bleed. If he could bleed, he could die. Kame saluted with a sword, his sword now. Levictus nodded, as if they had come to some agreement, and then advanced across the rain-splattered tiles. Again the shadows darted at Kame. He could see them better now, not as amorphous blobs, but as small, sleek creatures with sharp teeth and glittering black eyes. But before they could reach him, a black shape erupted from the darkness. The tiny shadow scurried out of the beast's path. It was huge, striding on four big paws. It resembled a great sable mastiff. Kame leveled his sword at the creature, but instead of attacking him, the thing turned to pursue the shadows, scooping them up in its massive jaws and tearing them to bits. Then Kame realized this was the same shadow creature he had seen before, at the vine and in the cellar under Josie's manor. It had never threatened him, only his enemies. This thing was somehow bound to him. Kame lifted the sword just in time to deflect the black knife aimed at his throat. Phosphoric sparks flew as the weapons connected, recoiled, and clashed again. The shadows had fled into the darkness, and the beast with them. Kame almost felt like his old self. He feinted high and slashed. The sword tore through black fabric and found flesh underneath. Levictus vanished, leaving behind a few spots of blood. But this time, Kame witnessed something he hadn't before. As the sorcerer disappeared, he stepped into a hole in the air, like a window into nothingness. It slammed shut behind him, but tendrils of dark luminescence remained. Kame turned, following them with his eyes. When Levictus reappeared on the other side of the roof, he struck. The sorcerer nearly fell on his back as his knives deflected the sword's path enough to avoid being spitted. Then, like a cat, he righted himself and kept coming. Around and around they circled. Kame took a scratch on his left hand, a shallow wound, but Levictus followed up with a series of stabs that put him on the defensive. Yet the sorcerer was slowing with every step, while Kame felt his stamina improving. The sword twitched in his hand like a living thing. He pressed with a riposte, but Levictus parried and leapt at him. Kame tried to reverse his momentum as the tip of a black knife raced toward his unprotected chest. He didn't have time to think as he twisted to avoid the deadly strike. The edge of the roof reared up toward him. Off balance, he would have fallen, should have fallen, except that the darkness billowed around him, cradling him in its grasp. His feet left the tiles and came down a moment later behind the sorcerer. Somehow, he'd been transported a dozen feet through thin air. Levictus turned, his knives moving. Even as his mind boggled at what had just happened, Kame lunged. The tendons of Levictus's neck stood out like taut cables. His eyes stabbed at Kame with the hatred of the damned for one interminable moment. Then he slumped to his knees. Kame shoved the blade deeper and stepped back. The sword's hilt quivered in the sorcerer's chest like the masthead of a floundering ship. In his mind, Kame saw his father, kneeling in the blood-drenched yard of their family estate.
Justice. At last.
Kame balled his hands into fists as the shadows returned, but they ignored him. Skittering like tiny spiders, they adhered themselves to the sorcerer's body until they encased it in a black cocoon. The corpse dissolved before Kame's eyes, melted away with the rain, and ran down the cracks between the roof tiles. A minute later, nothing was left but Kame's sword and an empty, sodden cloak. Kame watched the black garment flap in the wind. The presence was gone, the beast and the little shadows with it, and something else as well, his fear. A weight had been lifted from his mind. He was different, he accepted that, but he wasn't a monster.
Kame!
Josie!
Kame limped toward the roof's edge, but froze as lightning illuminated the night. Raoul was right in front of him, his grinning face streaked with lines of blood, sword drawn back. Kame grabbed at the blade with his naked hands, but it slid between his fingers. Warm blood bubbled over Kame's hands as he braced himself for the disemboweling twist, but the sword stopped. Rao gaped with a stunned expression and collapsed at Kame's feet. Kame lifted his gaze to the slight figure in drenched rags standing behind the dead assassin, one of Kame's own knives clutched in her shaking, blood-stained hands. Then, the roof jumped up to meet his face. Now he was on his back, Josie and Kit kneeling on either side of him. Water coursed down Josie's face. Overhead, the heavens roiled in their wrath, but an expanding sense of peace filled the hollow spaces of Kame's soul. Josie was safe.
It's all right.
Don't leave! Stay with me!
He wanted to stay, but he had to disappoint them both as the night pulled him down into its deep embrace. Morning brought a fresh glow to the city. Breezes laden with the sea's cleansing tang blew across the cemetery grounds and banished the lingering stenches of smoke and death. An imposing marble gravestone stood in the midst of the yard, the beveled edges of the words engraved upon it glinting in the pale sunlight. Kame Duvartha, 1218 to 1242. Dear friend and loyal subject, it is not the night we fear, but the gathering shadows beyond our ken. Kame read those words, their letters seared into his brain like harbingers from the next world. Although the faux funeral had been his idea, Josie had come up with the epitaph. He wasn't too keen on the loyal subject part. It had been an odd thing to observe his own funeral. He supposed this was how ghosts, recently evicted from their bodies, must feel as they watched their friends and loved ones gather to pay final tribute. In all, Kame found it rather dreary. Then again, the world had taken on a different shade since the events on the palace roof. The trees, the grass underfoot, even the people attending his memorial, none of them seemed completely real. A new presence flitted in and out of his awareness, always on the periphery. Every so often he would catch a glimpse of a shadow, low to the ground, moving swiftly, and then it would be gone. It was as if he had stepped through a doorway into another world. One deeper and more profound than the one he had known all his life, and there was no going back. Kit hadn't changed, of course. Or rather, she had returned to the same waif she had always been, ever youthful and bubbling with effervescence. Whatever transformation happened to her that night, it had reversed back by the time he regained consciousness. She refused to discuss the beastly presence, refused even to admit she'd seen it, which shouldn't have surprised him. Same old Kit. But everything else was different, much of it oddly so. For a known assassin to enter the palace was unnerving enough. To awaken in the imperial bedchamber, attended by dozens of physicians and nurses and servants, had almost been too much for him. But then Josie had appeared, and everything seemed right again. By now, the story was known throughout the city, how a lowborn man had saved the long-lost princess from traitors in the true church and made the ultimate sacrifice in her service. If whispers arose of how attached the young empress had become to her rescuer during their escapades, none could reproach her. Indeed, they served to make her more accessible to her new subjects. After all, weren't such romantic notions the stuff of bard songs? The sight of her, dolled up in full regalia as she officiated over his funeral ceremony, had made Kame's pulse race. She looked every bit an empress. Her hair had been dyed back to something close to its natural color. A gown of crushed velvet in somber purple, lined with snow leopard fur, accented her complexion and set off the jewels dripping from her neck, ears, and wrists. She was every man's fantasy. Young, beautiful, kind-hearted, yet tough enough to stand on her own. And as far beyond your reach as the moon and stars. A graceful young woman stood beside Josie, Anastasia, a friend from some important family. A stooped elderly man in a plain gray suit perched at Josie's elbow. Earl Frenig's manservant had been squirreled away in the palace dungeons after his master's murder. Besides being a bit undernourished, the old codger was little worse for wear. Hubert had stood in the front row amid several palace ministers. Head bowed, his left arm in a sling, the new Duke Vasili was a hero. In Lowtown, they were calling him Lord of the Gutters. Not the most charming title, but he had taken to it like a kitten to cream. Just days after taking over his father's affairs, Hubert had spearheaded an effort to revive the Thurum. Their first item of business was a salvo of bold reforms aimed at relieving the plight of Othar's poorest citizens, including a plan to rebuild the parts of the city destroyed in the fire. Together, Hubert and Josie were going to accomplish magnificent things. Another initiative coming out of the palace was the disbanding of the Sacred Brotherhood and the stripping of lands from wealthy priests. In the aftermath of the People's Revolt, as it was being called, the remaining hierarchs of the True Church had convened to elect a new prelate, one favorably disposed toward the restored Imperium. Fresh proclamations of friendship and mutual assistance flowed daily from Castle Devecchi. To all appearances, it was the beginning of a new era in Nemea. For the first time in a long time, the future on the horizon looked brighter than the fading glories of the past.
Wasn't this all a bit much? I mean, it's not like most of those people actually gave two figs for you when you were alive.
Yes, well, people have to have their pretenses.
A leather pack sat at his feet, beside a pair of wrapped bundles the length of his arm. Some victuals and a couple bottles liberated from the palace wine cellars, his bow, and his father's sword. Along with the clothes on his back and his knives, they were everything he owned in the world. The thought was oddly liberating.
You think anyone will fall for this?
Why not? After the murders and the riots, everyone just wants to get back to some sense of normalcy. If the burial of one poor thug is enough to satisfy them, isn't that a small price to pay?
You shouldn't be out of bed so soon. The doctor said it would be weeks before you'd be well enough to move about.
Kane pressed a hand against his stomach. A dull ache pulled at his muscles there, but something stronger pulled at his spirit.
I'm just here to say goodbye.
You don't have to leave. Hubert has an idea to change your identity. We could put you into some better clothes, change your hair, and not even your grandmother would recognize you.
It'd be curious if she did, as I've never met either of my grandmothers.
Josie twisted her fingers, heedless of the fortune and sapphires festooning them. Her gaze had dropped to his chest, as if she couldn't bring herself to look him in the eye anymore.
I would be dead if not for you.
As I remember it, you were the one who saved me.
She shook her head.
When I was hanging in the dark, I couldn't see anything. My hands were numb, my heart was numb. I started to give up. Then I remembered the way you fought, how you never gave up, no matter the odds. That gave me the strength to pull myself up.
She looked up with a new light shining in her eyes, a glorious flame of pride.
Whatever comes now, I know I can face it. You did more than save my life, Cain. What I'm saying is, you could have a family here. You and I, we could be...
She started to reach out, and he caught her hand in a gentle grasp.
I can't stay. I've made a lot of enemies in this town. Anyway, it wouldn't be proper for an empress to be seen in the company of an assassin, even if he's wearing silks and pomades.
He took her chin in his other hand. She moved closer, until the hem of her wide skirt brushed his boots. The sweetness of her taste lingered in his mouth for a long time after he pulled away. Her eyes were cloudy with emotion.
I could come with you. Wherever you're going, I don't care.
Pulling away from her was the hardest thing he'd ever done. Only the knowledge of what he was sparing her kept him from toppling back into her arms.
You have a lot of work to do here, Josie. Othun needs her empress. Our paths lead in different directions. For now.
Moisture glistened in her eyes. He smiled with care, afraid even the smallest gesture would crack the armor he had erected around his heart.
Where will you go?
He turned his gaze northward. Somewhere beyond the trees of the grove and the city walls lay the land of his birth. He didn't know what he would find once he got there, but the need to know about his past throbbed in him like a second heartbeat.
I have questions that need answering, and a long road to travel before I reach my destination.
What if the answers you want aren't there?
Then I'll keep searching.
Josie reached into a fur muff dangling from her sleeve and pulled out a bundle of papers wrapped in black cord.
Take this. There's a writ of safe passage inside, although I don't know how far that will extend. There's been no news out of the northern provinces for weeks. I intend to send a military detachment up there as soon as I can find the resources.
You're starting to sound like an empress already.
He accepted the package. Nestled among the documents was a thin book, like a diary. He started to pull it out.
And this?
She put her hands over his.
Read it later, after you've left the city environs. There might be information in there you can use. And, Cain, if you don't find what you're looking for, promise me you'll come back.
Cain pressed his lips to her fingers.
I promise, m'lady.
Then he turned and left, before the trembling in his legs could betray him. A breeze swirled through the trees and ruffled his hair as he trod across the carpet of fallen leaves. The sky was deepening to purple twilight. Kit danced before him in the failing light, her hair flowing free like a silver banner. He touched the golden talisman hung by a simple leather cord around his neck. He wanted to look back and catch one last glimpse of the woman he loved, of Othar's gleaming towers, of the life he was leaving behind. But he kept walking, through the gates, and into the gathering shadows beyond. This has been a graphic audio production of Shadow Sun. Copyright 2010, John Sprunk. All rights reserved. Recorded with permission of the author. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Thomas Keegan as Kame, Kara Novak as Josephine, Elizabeth Jernigan as Kit, Bruce Allen Rauscher as Ral, Joe Brack as Hubert, James Konacek as Archpriest Vasily, Danny Gavigan as Marcus, James Keegan as Cass, Richard Rowan as Levictus, Alyssa Wilmoth as Anastasia, Mort Shelby as Earl Frenig, Yasmin Toison as Madame Sonia, Larissa Gallagher as Mother, Colleen Delaney as Sibelle, Alexander Strain as Osmond Parmian, with Ted Stoddard, Gary Tells, David Coyne, Jeff Allen, Patrick Bussink, Scott McCormick, Margie Tompros, Kimberly Gilbert, Joseph Thornhill, and Christopher Sheeran. Directed and adapted for graphic audio by Richard Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Wayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. The Shadow Saga theme by Dan Sondak. Additional original music by Dan Sondak and Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Shadow Sun, be sure to look for the Night Angel trilogy and the Demon Cycle series. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Graphic Audio presents Lilith St. Crow's
Jill Kismet.
Come on in and step right up, ladies and gentlemen! See the hunter come into the ring. Yes, sir. It's a sight for the ages. And tonight's show will be the one to end all shows. Hurry, hurry, find your seats.
Book 4.
Flesh Circus.
Hola, bruja! Come in! Been expecting you!
The body shot forward, hitting the edge of the cornmeal circle, going full speed. When you want to talk about it, let me know.
You never have time.
You're kidding, right, Saul?
Do I sound like I'm kidding?
Don't worry about me, Saul. I did this job before you came along. Why don't you go and find a nice tabby and raise a litter or three? God knows you're domestic enough.
Jesus, Jill! Are you insane?
Darkness pressing down as if I were the thing to be exorcised from this house. One of the zombies leapt on me, and I struggled to free myself. What the fuck? I think Saul left me.
Left you? Why would...
Galena, my love life can wait. If Zomba kills who she's aiming for, there's going to be heavy-duty problems. Because on the other side of the central ring, leaning forward as if pushing into a heavy wind, stood Mama Zomba.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Cirque Diabolique!
We're all new and renewed. We're pedal to the metal and shoulder to the wheel. And welcome our new hostage. Time to clip and chain him.
You have our thanks, Hunter.
Available now in graphic audio.
Graphic Audio presents Cotton Pickens.
You calling me a cheat?
Well, friend, the way you're dealing off the bottom with them pasteboards, it sure looks like it to me.
Why, you horse's ass!
You there, man who called himself Cotton. We know you're down there in that holler. Ain't nobody gonna hurt you. We got a proposition for you. That's all. That there was Jack Nolan you killed back yonder in the saloon. The other one was his partner, the fat one named Larson. Both of them was gunslingers. You plenty fast, Mr. Cotton. Might be the man we want. You want a job?
I was still sort of not believing it when they handed me the badge. Sheriff of Puma County, Wyoming Territory. Notice, these rules go into effect right now. No shooting off guns in the town of Doubtful. No galloping horses in town. No horse racing in town. Now, I wouldn't hold it again none of you if you's all to quit, boys. You ain't getting paid enough to put your butts on the line. Way I see it, we're soon gonna have more than 50 gunfighters in this valley. I aim to either stop this building up war in the valley or stand right in the middle of it shooting. You boys planning on starting a war all by yourselves?
Law won't do nothing. So I guess that leaves it up to us, right, Sheriff?
What you all have to do is get organized, get together. Little ranchers, farmers, sheepmen, you all gotta start pulling in double harness. You gotta start being real careful not to let none of these high-paid gunslicks pull you into trying to match them on the draw. I done all that a man could do, Preacher. But I'll add this. You're fixing to get a lot of good men killed in this valley if you don't back off this stupid plan of yours and break up this so-called army.
Nonsense! I shall lead my Christian army into the valley of death, and we shall emerge victorious, waving the banner of Christ!
Cotton!
Jack? What's on your mind?
Killing you!
You're crazy, Jack! Plum loco! We're brothers!
Don't make no difference!
You're lying, Jack. Who hired you to gun me?
Nobody, Cotton. And I'm telling you the truth. It's a business, Cotton. That's all it is. I'd kill Pa if he was around and got in my way.
Jack, don't draw on me. I'm better than you are, Jack.
No way, kid. See you in hell.
Cotton Pickens, Graphic Audio's newest Western hero, takes to the saddle in Cotton Pickens 1, Blood Valley.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.